do my stopwatch. Okay. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the third and final press conference of the Fall General Assembly with the bishops. I think I might be a little overmodulated, maybe, guys on the mic. So I will go ahead and turn it over to Bishop Coyne. Again, Bishop Coyne is from Burlington, Vermont. He is also chairman for the Committee on Communications for the USCCB, and he will be introducing our panelist. Bishop Coyne.
Thank you. It's been a long couple of days, and there's been a lot of material that we've covered, but these three bishops have come to speak to some of the specifics about what was talked about over the course of yesterday and today. Far down the end is Bishop Sean McKnight from Jefferson City. He will offer a focus on best practices in his diocese and the effectiveness of the charter implementation, which was what the bishops discussed in their regional meetings this morning. He's also open to reflection on some of the day's broader topics. Bishop Shelton Fabre is the Bishop of Homo Thibodeau, and he's the chairman of the Ad Hoc Committee Against Racism, and I apologize if I butchered your last name.
That's okay.
Is it Fabre or Fabre?
Fabre, like Bob with
Fabre. And he will speak, my last name's Coyne. We'll speak to the enduring call to love, the pastoral letter against racism. And in the middle is Bishop Oscar Cantu, coadjutor bishop of San Jose, a committee member on the Committee on International Justice and Peace. Again, speaking to the regional discussions this morning, he'll offer some questions on best practices in the diocese and speak to the broader agenda. And then afterwards, we'll be available some one-on-ones down in front of the podium. So,
great.
So back to Judy.
Thank you so much. So we'll begin with our questions. Again, same note as last time. Please wait for the handheld mic. And Julie.
Brother Reese.
Carol, so sorry. I'm so sorry, Carol.
It has been a long couple of days.
Sorry.
Oh.
Yes.
I paid for this microphone.
My question's to Bishop McKnight. During the session, you spoke a few times about the importance of the laity getting involved. And I just, now that we're wrapping this up, is there something you feel we can hold on to, that how can the lay people help the church go forward? I don't know if you have any insight, like a couple. Are you hopeful that the lay people can help? I know a lot of lay people are angry, but a lot of people are wanting to help, so
very much so.
Where do you go with
it's
that?
Not only do I hope, I know the lay people can and will help us through this crisis, and their expertise is what we need at this time. And what I found interesting was the affirmation that the bishops individually already have a certain amount of power and authority to do what many of us would like to do as a conference-wide or larger universal set of norms, whether it's reviewing of files by an independent lay board of some sort, whether it's the review board of the diocese or contracting someone to come in and do that. The release of names of those credibly accused is something a bishop can do on his own. I have recently informed the religious community serving in my diocese that they also have to commit to releasing names of their communities of credibly accused in order to remain in service in my diocese. And then, of course, I've already instituted a process of utilizing the review board of the Metropolitan See if there is an accusation against the sitting bishop of the Diocese of Jefferson City. All of those touch upon things we were looking at doing as a conference. Individual bishops can do it already. We have that ability. And that's what I would encourage. So there are ways that a bishop can right now utilize laity in helping build credibility in an individual diocese for an individual diocesan bishop to govern in this time of crisis.
Ian, please.
Hi, Ian Levitt with the Wall Street Journal. I was going to ask this of Cardinal DiNardo, but he's not here, so I don't. I suppose anyone can take it. There was talk of doing a number of different things, you know, be that the statement about Archbishop Vigano, be that a statement of support for Pope Francis, and be that, I heard talk at least of of trying to get together a statement, just a resolution saying what you all would like to do. None of those things happened. And I'm wondering if we can get some explanation of why there was no statement on any of this, sort of officially on behalf of the whole body that came out of this week.
In his final remarks, he did speak to the point that was raised on the floor during the presentation from member bishops, that they felt, some felt that there was a lack of support from the body of bishops for Pope Francis. So at least two or three times at the very beginning of his final remarks, he made mention of times that we had, sent letters and proclamations of support as a conference to the Holy Father, and then added that we're doing it once again through this. As far as the other matters go, I think he did the best he could in terms of what we could and couldn't do moving forward, that in fact, we're continuing to do positive things, committed to transparency, committed to lay involvement, committed to accountability by the bishops. It's just that, again, I'll say it, that decision by the Holy See through the Congregation of Bishops to kind of constrain us from actually implementing things did in fact allow for a limited response in the manner that to which you see at the end. So yes, all of us are disappointed that we weren't able to do as much as we wanted, but I still think we're moving in the right direction and doing it for the right reasons.
And he said in his final comment that there was consensus from this. I did not at least see a whole ton of consensus on some of these issues. I'm wondering if one of you can speak to how much agreement or disagreement there is at this point on how to move forward on.
Go ahead, John, or Oscar.
I mean, I think there was consensus in the anger that was expressed by the bishops, and every one of us has heard the anger of our lay people back home in our dioceses. And so I felt that we listened for several, many hours over the past couple of days to those concerns and the anger, and to specific recommendations, though we could not act on them specifically, but for Cardinal DiNardo as the president of the conference to take them to the meeting in February, because I agree this conference has to be a leader globally. In many ways, in what we've done with the Dallas Charter, the good things that have been accomplished over the past 16 years have to be replicated across the world. And so that will be a point of sharing with the other conferences, and for Pope Francis himself to hear. So I think there were some positive things that were accomplished. And Cardinal DiNardo's personal resolve to do something.
I'd say too, real quickly, I noticed certain members of the conference that I've had the privilege of watching over the years as a staff member, former at the Conference of Bishops, that are, I would say, generally can be found on the right, and they were strongly advocating that the laity be more involved in the governance of the church in some capacity. Strangely, this crisis might be drawing us closer together in the fundamental need we have in the reform of the church following the Second Vatican Council, and that is the utilization of the lay charisms and expertise in the mission of the church. So I think there was a recognition from left to right of the need to somehow find a way to incorporate the lay genius in the resolution of our crisis.
Great. Susan. Susan Pinto. Sorry. Yes.
Susie Pinto with EWTN News Nightly. As you wrap up, my question is, as pastors, what are you going to tell the faithful in each of your dioceses? There was much anticipation and expectation, many expectations leading up to this meeting. And as you head home, what will you tell the faithful?
I think one of the things I will tell the faithful in my diocese, and most importantly, is that I again heard victims. I heard their story. I heard their pain. I heard their struggle. I heard their challenge. And I heard their call that we do something. So I was particularly moved again listening to the victims that we did hear. I will tell them that. And I think I will also say that, you know, here in this meeting, there are many, many things that were lifted up as possible to do already, that we don't have to wait, as has been announced. So those are some of the things that I will tell them, that I heard again, you know, the tragedy of this, which was the victims and their own pain and their own hurt. And again, that has sparred me to do those things that I can do to prevent this from happening again.
I'm going to continue to just say that I'm committed to transparency and accountability, as I have been, and that my personnel files in Boston and in Indianapolis and in Vermont are open to anyone who wants to see them, just as it was as a priest, that I think that that's something that every bishop should put himself forward to do as well, because that's what happened with the priests, and that I'm absolutely continuing to support the lay board that I put in place to investigate all the priest files, and that they can make their own independent report independent from me. Each bishop can continue to do the positive things that are coming out of this conference on their own without having to have a consensus or a document. So we just continue to each do our own things.
Michael O'Loughlin.
Mike O'Loughlin from America Magazine. I just have a couple clarifying questions, maybe for Bishop Coyne. Cardinal DiNardo said on Monday's press conference that the documents he thought were finished on October 30th, there was a report yesterday that the Vatican didn't receive them until a few days ago. Do you know when they were finished and when the Vatican received them?
I do not. I only know that my brother bishops and I received them a week ago, last Friday and Monday. We received them on Friday and Monday, depending upon which one of the panels we signed in on. I don't know when the Holy See actually saw the finished documents, but I do know from my conversations with staff that, in fact, the gist of what was in the documents was shared with the Holy Father in a general way, and he said that he saw it as a very positive thing, but he did not see the details.
Okay. Do you know, was there any indication before the letter to Cardinal DiNardo that the Vatican might have issues with some of the proposals?
Not that I'm aware, and in fact, I can't speak for Cardinal. I can only just speak for what Cardinal himself said, that this caught him completely by surprise, as everybody else.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Father Tom Reese.
Tom Reese from Religion News Service. I apologize, first a complaint and suggestion, then a question. The media never received the draft of the pastoral letter on racism. It's pretty hard to cover your work if we don't get the document. You know, in the past, we used to get these documents sometimes long before the bishops meet, or at least by the beginning of the bishop's meeting. It's impossible to cover an important document like this unless we get it so that we can actually write about it. Mm-hmm. It was given to Catholic News Service, and I love my friends at Catholic News Service, but it was not made available to any other reporters, and I think that's a serious mistake if you want coverage of your work. Right. Now, my question is on the
Can I answer?
Sure.
It wasn't really finalized until the bishops voted the amendments or accepted it. So it was finalized here.
That has nothing to do with my question. My question was about the draft. The draft was made available to Catholic News Service weeks ago. And was not made available to any other journalists.
Thank you for your comment, which I think was more of a comment than a question. But we're gonna move on to some other questions. And it was not in its final form, and we can discuss that after. But we're gonna move on to some other questions here that have to do with what was happening today on the floor. So any further questions that we've got here on the floor? JD, okay, go ahead, Tom. If you've got another question, go ahead.
All four of you have to deal with the issue of making the names of priests available, public. Mm-hmm. In San Jose, you're just doing it right now. How do you decide which priests' names are made public. This whole question of credible and what it means, substantiated in what it means. What is best practices that you discussed in the regional meetings, and what's your consensus on what is the best practice here?
I just released names last Thursday, and I have been thinking about that for months. The first criteria or goal that I'm concerned about is what's good for victims. We have to find and uncover the victims that are still out there, that have not come forward. And so we have to keep that in mind, as well as the need to build credibility in the existing clergy that we have in our diocese, so that people know that the ones that do not belong in the clergy and ministry are not there. So I use the criteria of credibly accused, meaning that it was more likely than not to be true what was accused. I had to develop a second category, because in the process of some of our cases, we did not have a credible accusation for one reason or another, but in the process of investigating, we learned aspects about the minister that does not make them fit for ministry, that they're a danger. So this is new to us. We're having to answer and develop things that nobody else has done. And so I would suggest, I have found that there are differences of opinion. That's where standardization would be very helpful, if we had a definition of when do they go on the list and when are they kept off the list. But you know what kind of danger that is if we keep them off the list, and then it eventually there's an investigation by the Attorney General or some other case, it looks like cover-up.
We are using our lay review board. They are assisting me and looking at again and saying this name should be on the list or that name should not be on the list as credible and substantiated or that criteria. So we're using our lay review board in that way as well.
Part of the discussion in California among the bishops is that precisely we don't have a common standard with regard to how do we define credible. And so that was raised this week. We would like some national standards, but each bishop is using his best judgment together with his lay board, mm-hmm. with the with a team of experts and advisors, I know in San Jose we released the names two or three weeks ago, and there was a question that was raised later: why were many religious priests not, who have been on other lists, not included in ours? And that was, we didn't have files on them. So Bishop Knight mentioned, you know, we're treading new water here, and we're trying to do our best. Absolutely.
Okay, great. And I think that's going to conclude. JD, do you have another question?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
Go ahead. All right.
There's a great deal of talk about transparency, so I have a two-part question about transparency. The first is, will the conference release the correspondence? This was not only an affront to bishops, but to the people of God. Will the conference release the back-and-forth correspondence between conference officials and the Congregation for Bishops and other dicasteries so that we can understand what happened as well as you can? And then second of all, what will you try to do during executive session? What will the bishops try to do during executive session to say something to the people of God by the end of this meeting?
The issue with the letter that the cardinal received, it was personal and confidential, which means basically that he's not free to release it without the consent of the person who did. So he'll have to ask the Congregation of Bishops if he can release the full letter himself. I agree with you that we absolutely have to be open and transparent in these matters, that anytime we just come out with a done deal, whether it's the resignation of a bishop, whether it's whatever it may be, if you just say, we hereby accept the bishop's resignation for the, and thank him for his service, and we don't give a reason, then everybody starts finding reasons, speculation. It's this, and when this came out with a reason just other than the February thing, everybody starts looking for different reasons, and we look like we're covering things up. So I think that the best thing for us as a conference is exactly what you're calling for, and I hope that we can do that as we move forward.
Okay, great. I think we're going to conclude.
We do one-on-ones.
Conclude the press conference right now. So thank you all for attending, and this concludes the press conferences. We do have a Facebook Live that's going to be happening at 7 o'clock.